Welcome to the show. And why would we be playing a clip of Mary Poppins and a child making a run on the bank? Tate, kick us off on this special episode that we're recording here late in the evening hours to provide our listeners a glimpse of what's happening with the banking industry right now.
Specifically, yeah, all over the news, the Silicon Valley Bank has collapsed, the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. A lot of people are nervous. They don't know what's going on. So we wanted to do this special episode, bring you what happened, why it happened, and how it affects me, right? How it affects you. Or maybe it doesn't. So with that, let's get to the show.
A rough week for the banking industry.
The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. The second biggest bank collapse in U.S. history.
The Silicon Valley Bank collapsed on March 10 after a run on deposits doomed the tech-focused lenders' plans to raise fresh capital. This prompted U.S. regulators to step in with emergency measures.
So it's all over the news. Silicon Valley Bank just collapsed. It's the second largest banking collapse in U.S. history. However, it is the 16th largest bank in the U.S. This bank has been a favorite of founders and tech companies for the last few years. And because of that, their deposits have swelled from $49 billion in 2018 to $102 billion in 2020 and to $189 billion by the end of 2021. So they've experienced explosive growth. They are an international icon for venture capital, and they sit at the center of the global venture scene. They also, as I have become aware, are uniquely positioned to underwrite tech companies and venture capital, and therefore have been a darling of the tech industry. So, Ryan, what do you think? The same questions were rolling around your head a few days ago as were mine. And what are your thoughts on this before we dive into some data?
Well, first of all, I just want to say for, you know, those investors at Spartan that are listening, you know, we don't have any relation with SVB, and your deposits are safe, your investments are safe with us. We don't have any affiliation with either Signature Bank, Republic Bank, or First Republic Bank. It seems like that one has been recovered, though, at this point. So, you know, rest assured, there really isn't any issues. But what do I think? I think this is very interesting that a bank, you know, like you were saying, Tate, you know, took on so much depository over the last 3 years. And if you think about what the Fed has done to the cost of capital, they've kept it so low for so long. We've had a increasing monetary supply that has filled up bank accounts with a huge amount of deposits.
Yep.
And then round the corner at the end of 2022, early 2023, the Fed goes on a crazy interest rate hike, and just overnight, it seems like the Fed funds rate goes from 0.008% all the way up to north of 4.5%, and has indicated it's still going to go higher. So what does this mean for us? It means that these deposits that are just sitting in the bank account, they, you know, you have a bunch of cash going into a bank. And what a bank has to do to make money is they have to either lend that out or they have to make interest on that cash. And so what they did was they did the safe thing, put it in bonds, and just said, hey, we can't loan this money out. We can't make money on this money fast enough. So they put it all in long-term bonds. And when those bonds, you know, and Tate's going to kind of guide us through how bonds work, but basically betting on longer-term, lower interest rates is what the bonds were going to pay. And what happens is all of a sudden the Fed just raises interest rates like a rocket ship, and those bonds basically become less valuable. Right. And when they become less valuable, and then all of a sudden people want their money out of the bank, which is why we played that clip in the beginning. And now the bank panics and says, oh my gosh, I can't give you that money back until I sell my bonds. Oh, I'm selling my bonds at a loss. Right. Now I'm basically taking depositor money and giving it back, and I've got to generate that liquidity. So crazy. I mean, everything just sort of happened so fast, and we're going to really dive into it here. We're going to dive into why it matters for pilots, what you should be thinking about, how you can plan to avoid this. I'll just conclude and turn it back to you, Tate, by saying,
yeah,
you know, this is like an ASAP report of a near miss of airplanes. And, you know, the only thing that saved it was, you know, the air traffic controller saying, you know, turn right immediately.
yep.
to a heading of, you know, 200 and climb, and the pilot responding, right? So right. I think yep. the government intervention here is really going to be impactful, and we're going to dive into that. We're going to dive into what the government did and all that, and this is going to be a fun show. So
it is. Yeah, I'm really excited to sort of lay this all out. So first, let's start out with the bank run, right? And we've all heard of, you know, it was like the Great Depression, right? People are running on the banks and they run out of cash. It's like, okay, well, let's explain that first. Like, why was there a run on Silicon Valley Bank? Well, I think one of the most interesting things is that the same community that sort of built this bank up to what it was, quite hypocritically, actually, when you look into it, was the catalyst for it. Its fall. Peter Thiel of the Founders Fund went on record last week and told people to pull their money out. He was one of the ones who was pushing money and pushing people into this bank. So in any case, a lot of draw, a lot of depository draw from people who were scared of the bank's balance sheet. In addition, Silicon Valley Bank had more exposure to downside than other banks. Why? Well, the FDIC is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which was created after the Great Depression to insure bank deposits up to $250,000. So if you don't know, if you put cash in a bank and the bank goes out of business, your money is insured up to $250,000. If you have $250,001, you're going to lose a buck. 50% of all cash deposits in banks in the US today are above the FDIC limit in whatever checking account they are. That's a really easy thing to fix. If you have more than 250K sitting in a bank account, fix that. All you have to do is open a second checking account because the next checking account is insured also for up to 250,000. So 50% of money is basically sitting naked in checking accounts. However, 95% of all the deposits at Silicon Valley Bank were over that limit. Why? Because there's a bunch of busy tech CEOs running around depositing their money there, and they had massive cash balances. Next, what happened was VC got a lot more stingy this last year, right? It used to be, hey, we got cash in the bank. We're just going to go raise another round. Well, that ain't happening this year. And so everyone's pulling cash out of their bank account. In addition, because Silicon Valley Bank grew so fast, usually a bank has time to deploy via the fractional banking system, which we can talk about in a little bit here. But they did what they thought was a safe bet and an easy bet, which was, hey, we got so much cash to deploy. Let's just buy bonds. Just buy bonds. Like we'll stay more liquid than we need to. And the problem, like you alluded to, is that now those bond values have dropped. We can get into that as well in terms of like how that works. But in any case, I'll kick it back to you for now.
Yeah. So great point. And it's interesting that this time around, you know, on Sunday, I was, you know, reading the reports and listening to what was happening this past weekend. And my initial thought was, you know, I actually was pretty bullish on the FDIC stepping in and guaranteeing all the deposits here, because if you think about the kind of two-pronged approach there, number one, I mean, this isn't, you know, here's Silicon Valley Bank, you might be thinking, oh, these are just a bunch of billionaires. These are a bunch of people that, you know, can stomach this. And, you know, I don't feel bad for them and the government shouldn't bail them out. And, you know, you're certainly entitled to your opinion. But the reality is that, you know, this is like cancer research companies and small business and Etsy, Amazon store, you know, small entrepreneurs, you know, there are people.
Napa Valley Vineyards. I mean, they're all over the place.
Yeah. And I think maybe Patagonia's, and basically, like, if you think about all of the businesses that would have been impacted, and these are healthy businesses, these are businesses that had great balance sheets. These are businesses that had very good incremental growth. And all of a sudden now you have this situation where they don't have any money in their bank account anymore, and it's no fault other than, you know, the banks. And so, yeah, let's go after the guys that were running the bank and not keeping tabs on this. But also, let's consider that this was kind of a very, you know, aligning of the Swiss cheese here, as we say, in an accident. You know, you had a perfect storm. You had a perfect storm of the bank taking on so many deposits over the last 3 years, and then you had a perfect storm of interest rates going up so fast. You know, we knew
interest in history.
Yeah, in history. And then bond values just absolutely plummeting. The funny thing, though, or not the funny thing, but the interesting thing, too, is, you know, people were kind of armchair quarterbacking this unraveling. People were calling this. And, you know, the government didn't step in time. So, you know, you could see this unwinding, you know, as bond values started to plummet, and we could see, and the banks are required to disclose what they hold in their assets, right? So this wasn't like, this was a very well televised, you know, event that the government really never stepped in to regulate or fix. But that leads me to, you know, the Frank Dodd Act of 2008, because when, you know, when this happened in Bear Stearns in 2008 and the whole financial industry collapsed, there was rulemaking that was put into place to prevent this from happening again. Tate, you want to touch on that and kind of talk about what rules got kind of flip-flopped this time around?
Yeah, I'm going to take the long way around, though, because I think we need to sort of set the table with the fractional reserve banking system first, and then how bonds work in order to sort of fully understand the implications of that Dodd-Frank Act. So let's start with the fractional reserve banking system. I think everybody knows that when you put $100 in the bank, that $100 doesn't just sit there, right? It goes out and it makes loans. What most people don't realize is that it's not just $100 that the bank can loan out. It can loan 10 times or even more that amount, right? So if you put $100 in the bank, it can borrow from the Federal Reserve against that $100 and loan up to, you know, nearly 1,000 or more out on loans. Well, let's get a little bit more complicated. So there's also what's called Tier 1 leverage ratio. This is the amount of core capital that the bank has to keep for liquidity purposes versus the total assets that the bank invests, right? Because, you know, making a loan to you, Ryan, to go buy a home is an investment for the bank, right? Because it makes interest on that money. So core capital, you know, it doesn't, that cash that sits in the bank for liquidity purposes, even that isn't just cash. It's held in bonds. It's held in common equity stock in the bank, and other liquid vehicles, so that it can liquidate those assets quickly to generate cash for depositors that want their money back. You know, they can't go to you for your mortgage and say, you know, hey, we want our $600,000 back because, you know, some customer wants it over here. They signed a paperwork with you to give it to you to buy a home, right? However, they can sell that debt elsewhere. And the same holds true to the bonds. So that's the fractional reserve system. Very, very basic in terms of the Tier 1 leverage ratio that banks have to comply with. And now let's sort of quickly explain bonds. Bonds, I think, are some of the least understood asset class of real estate investors. However, they are, the market for bonds is just massive. You know, people say that, you know, if the stock market's up, the economy's doing well. If it's down, the bond market, it just absolutely dwarfs any other market in the world. The global bond market is it's estimated by ICMA to be $128 trillion. And that consists of, wow, 87 trillion or 68% in government bonds. That'd be the US, China, Japan making up the largest ones, and then other countries. And then 32% of that, or $40 trillion of corporate bonds. So the bond market is really what shapes the economy and where we're going, right? But in any case, the way that bonds work is there's an inverse relationship between the yield and the price, which real estate investors understand this with cap rate. So if you understand cap rate, you should pretty much understand bonds, right? If the yields compress, values go up. If the yields rise, values come down. But that doesn't make sense at first, right? Because you're like, well, you buy a bond and you make a return. And that's true if you hold it to maturity. So if you buy I buy a 2-year bond from Ryan, right? I buy a corporate bond from Spartan. I say, you say, hey, you're going to pay me 2% on my money, and it's a two-year bond. That means I'm going to get 2% per year. And at the end of it, I'm going to get my $1,000 back. So the price of the bond doesn't matter at all to me if I don't plan on selling it anytime within those 2 years. So it doesn't matter what happens with interest rates. It doesn't matter. I just don't care, right? I'm going to make my 2% and then I'm going to get my money back. And whether it's a 2-year bond, a 10-year bond, whatever, at the end of that hold period, you get your money back. Well, the problem comes in when you want to trade that bond somewhere in the hold period. So if this bank, Silicon Valley Bank, bought a bunch of 10-year treasury bonds, right? And they were paying 2%. Well, now 10-year treasury bonds are paying what? 4.5%, 5%. So what's the value of that bond now if they want to sell it in the interim? Well, not as much as they paid for it, right? Now, if they hold it for the entire period, it's going to be worth exactly what they paid for it, and they're going to get that 2% interest all the way through. But if they want to trade it, if they say, okay, we need to sell this bond for liquidity because our depositors need their money back, well, they're selling at this massive loss. So getting back to the Dodd-Frank Act, prior to 2008, unrealized losses on bonds and other financial instruments that the banks will hold for liquidity had to be reported. So banks in 2008 were showing negative equity on their balance sheets, right? Because they hadn't sold anything, but if they sold their bonds, then they were going to generate these massive losses, right? So the Dodd-Frank Act tuned that up and said, well, you know, we realize that the banks don't actually need to sell these things at a loss. You know, they can borrow capital against them and hold them. And therefore, we're not going to require that. However, we're up against this, you know, anomaly now with super fast rate rise in interest rates, where all of these banks are holding massive, massive unrealized losses if they were required to sell. So hopefully that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, the takeaway here for pilots is, you know, if you've got money at your bank and you want to prevent this from happening in the future, you want to make sure that you don't have it at more than $250,000 on deposit. But here's the fun part. It didn't matter in this case. The government stepped in and helped the bank essentially, or didn't help the bank, but helped the depositors who had their money on deposit at this bank ensure past the beyond the $250,000 deposit limit. I mean, this is essentially the government moving in the direction of nationalizing banking deposits, right? That's not what's happened, but
It's really, I mean, what they came in with, and I think this was my initial confusion when I started reading about this, was the difference between FDIC and what the Fed has stepped in with. And the Fed has stepped in saying, hey, we're bringing in this new program called the BTFP. It's the Bank Term Funding Program. It means that treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, among others, will be valued at par, meaning open market bond values that have been impaired by a year of Fed rate hikes will not reduce what a bank might borrow from the central bank. So basically saying, hey, we realize you have these bonds, they're worth money. If you sell them now, they're going to be at a horrendous loss, but we'll let you borrow money against them to fulfill your depositors' needs. And that was a massive, you know, they plugged the hole, they fixed it overnight. And this was just a couple days ago.
Yeah. I mean, this all started unraveling on Wednesday. People were lining up to get their deposits and their wires out by Thursday and Friday. I mean, the news spread like wildfire through Silicon Valley. I mean, everybody texting each other and telling each other to go get their money out, you know, happened very, very quickly. And by Monday morning, I mean, this Sunday night, really, I think the plan was in place. So pretty swift action.
Very swift. You know, it's exactly what needed to happen.
Yeah. And if you think about it, if it didn't happen, and there was a lot of, you know, discussion about this early on, if it didn't happen, I mean, this could have had wide sweeping effects across all lenders or all banks across the country, because I'm sure that, you know, it begs the question, you know, how many bonds are these banks holding with their depositors? And now everybody, you know, freaking out, basically saying, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to withdraw my money if I don't do it now. And then obviously, those banks would then get into this really bad cycle of saying, hey, I have to sell my bonds to pay the deposits. I have to sell them at a loss, which is going to basically put the bank into a death spiral to pay those depositors back their money that they're owed. So I think the hole that was plugged was a really, really big move, and you know, may leave people a little bit bullish on, you know, kind of the Fed stance on what's going to happen on interest rates coming up, because obviously, you know, the Fed meets very soon on interest rate hikes and plan to meet a couple times more this year. And, you know, maybe this fallout from, you know, the interest rates really having a surprise impact on a situation, or maybe a little less of a surprise, but might temper the Fed's
gusto
initiative to raise rates. And they might maybe they might level them off. I don't know. Right. I'm not here to speculate on that, but, you know, it's an interesting situation. You know, nonetheless, of what's happened in the last couple of days.
Right. My general takeaway is that, you know, I think the lesson here is that, you know, it was a needless source of instability having 50% of all checking accounts over the FDIC, or not necessarily checking accounts, but 50% of all cash values held in banks are over the FDIC limit. So it's obviously time to up that limit. It's just sort of silly that we don't adjust that upwards. But yeah, I think the Fed was successful in terms of stemming what could have been a radically damaging event. But we're in good shape.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to bring this to you live from our respective studios here. I'm actually on the road in Denver.
That's right.
And going into a meeting and tomorrow morning. So we'll be bright and early. Tate, where are you today?
I am in Honolulu. It's 9 p.m. for me. What is it? Almost 1 a.m. for you?
It's almost 1 a.m. So
we tell you what, this is what it takes to bring value to our listeners.
There we go. There we go. Well,
and this is super fun.
Yeah, we're having a blast doing this. Again, I know we're early on in our podcast here, but if you like, follow, subscribe, send this to other fellow pilots, we'll keep dropping really great content, bringing on good guests, and we really appreciate everybody listening to the show. So thank you.
Hey, thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful Banking Wednesday, and take care.